Rachel died somewhere before they got to Ephrath, to Bethlehem. So somewhere along between Bethel and Bethlehem, Rachel died giving birth to Benjamin. And from there, they moved on down to Hebron. And there he was reunited with his father. So we got down there, and Joseph was obviously his favorite son. He made no qualms about showing it. Rachel was his favorite wife, and that caused us no end of problems in the family. This business of showing favoritism from one part of the family to another part of the family is always going to cause problems, and certainly it did for Jacob. But he sent Joseph out with two of his brothers to tend the flock. And Joseph brought back a bad report about his brothers. I believe that was Dan and Naphtali. Two of the boys anyway. And that didn't exactly endear him with the rest of his brothers. Then he had two dreams, both of which indicated that his brothers were going to bow down to him, and the second one, that perhaps his mother and father as well. Although Joseph's mother at this time, biological mother, had passed away, giving birth to his brother Benjamin. So then the boys were even more hateful toward Joseph with these events. And so we're going to find then that this is basically where we ended the class 2 weeks ago. So then his brothers went to pasture the flock in Shechem. So if we back up one, I'll get there someday. They have gone from here back up to Shechem, and they're pasturing the flock in this area. At least that's where they had gone to pasture the flock. Joseph didn't find them there and had to go on up to the town of Dothan. This area up here is where they apparently had stopped at this particular time with the flocks. So Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them." And he said to him, "I will go." Then he said to him, "Go now and see about the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of the flock, and bring word back to me." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. A man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, "What are you looking for?" And he said, "I'm looking for my brothers. Please tell me where they are pasturing the flock." Then the man said, "They have moved from here. I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" And so Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. So he goes on up further north and finds his brothers up there. But they see him coming. And when they saw him from a distance, before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Now then, come, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits, and we will say a wild beast devoured him. Then let us see what will become of his dreams." But Reuben heard this and rescued him out of their hands and said, "Let us not take his life." Reuben further said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit that is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him. Now, that he might rescue him out of their hands and to restore him to his father." So it came about when Joseph reached his brothers, they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the varicolored tunic that was on him, and they took him and threw him into the pit. Now the pit was empty without any water in it. This may well have been a cistern that somebody had dug, but it was a pit deep enough that he couldn't climb out of it. We notice Reuben here. Reuben is the oldest of Jacob's sons, and Reuben would have been about 6 years older than Joseph. Joseph was 17 when he saw the visions, or when he brought back the bad report We really don't know exactly how long between that and this particular event happening here. Probably wasn't very long, but it wasn't necessarily the same time. So Reuben is probably around 23, 24, somewhere in that area, maybe even 25, depending on how long it has been. And he's responsible enough that now he's not going to kill his brother. But rather than fight with his brothers about it, he just says, well, put him in the pit, thinking that he'll sneak back later and let him go. He didn't want to kill him. So Reuben's morals weren't all that good. We saw at a previous lesson where he was caught laying with his father's wife, one of the concubines that Jacob had. So Reuben has his problem with morals, but he did save Joseph's life at this particular point in time. These boys were relatively tough, worldly young men, if we want to look at them, think about them as that way. We see Judah in a different time having relations with what he thought was a prostitute. Turns out it was his daughter-in-law. But the morals of these young men was not very high, at least by our standards today. I don't know how the standards in that day were, but they probably weren't that much different. So then they sit down to eat a meal. As they raised their eyes and looked, behold, a caravan of Ishmaelites was coming from Gilead with their camels bearing aromatic gum and balm and myrrh on the way to bring them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. So this was Judah comes up with this plot. Then some Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled him up and lifted Joseph out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. Thus they brought Joseph to Egypt. Ishmaelites were descendants of Abraham's son through Hagar. So they were descendants of Ishmael. The Midianites were descendants of a son of Abraham through his second wife, Keturah. So we see these people and their family-wise relatively closely related. They didn't sit down to try to work out what the relationships were. But they were relatively closely related. But remember that Abraham lived 75 years after Isaac was born. And Isaac lived 100 and some years and is still alive at this particular point in time. So the families have been separated. They live in different parts of the country. The Midianites and the Ishmaelites, both living further south from Hebron even. So they're down closer to the Gulf of Aqaba, that arm of the Red Sea that comes up that direction. So it's not like they sold him off into perfect strangers, at least they may not have known each other at all. They were there. It's also interesting that these two peoples lived south of where Jacob was living at this point in time, and yet they seem to be coming from the north. So they're apparently people who travel the region trading. They're itinerant traders would be what they appear to be, because they were certainly a long ways north of their home country when they found these boys up at Dothan. Now Reuben returned to the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit. So he tore his garments. He returned to his brothers and said, the boy is not there. As for me, where am I to go? So they took Joseph's tunic and slaughtered a male goat and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the varicolored tunic and brought it to their father and said, "We found this. Please examine it to see whether it is your son's tunic or not." Then he examined it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." So Jacob tore his clothes and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. Then all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted, and he said, "Surely I will go down to Sheol in mourning for my son." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold him to Egypt, to Potiphar, Pharaoh's officer, the captain of the bodyguard. So we see this particular point here, and then the scene in the scripture basically turns to Joseph for the next few chapters, and then Jacob will reappear on the scene, basically, get down to chapter 45. But we notice it says here, his sons and his daughters. Now, how many daughters did Jacob have? We only know of one. And any listing we see of them only lists one daughter. But he had granddaughters. Again, we don't know how many there. So it's probably lumping, as it says, daughters, all of his female descendants into that particular category. Otherwise, it makes no sense to put the plural in there. So we'll go back and study the life of Joseph. We'll overlap a little bit with what we talked about here. But we're going to skip this particular part of it, the stories of Joseph down in Egypt. And note that Jacob comes back into the scene when we get down here into chapter 45. So they went up, then they went up from Egypt. Now Jacob had sent the boys down to Egypt to buy food. And they come back from Egypt. So this was after the second time they had gone down there. They came to the land of Canaan, to their father Jacob. They told him, saying, "Joseph is still alive. Indeed, he is ruler of the land of Egypt." But he was stunned, for he did not believe them. When they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. Then Israel said, "It is enough. My son Joseph is alive. I will go and see him before I die." And I got to do something that... Looks like I got several messages from Roger here. But I'll look at those later. Roger, if you don't know, had a tree breaking up in the front yard and fell and smashed both his cars, tore down some power lines, killed power to the rest of the cul-de-sac. His house has still got power, but the rest of the cul-de-sac does not. Now he's got down power lines. Two cars damaged. The third one is apparently okay, but he can't get it out of the cul-de-sac. So he probably won't make it here this morning. There may be some more pictures with that as well. So it's been several years. We can definitely pin down 9 years. We'll get back into that time interval when we get back to studying Joseph. But it's been several years, and apparently Jacob has been mourning the whole time. Now he hears that Joseph is alive, and he really has difficulty believing it. So, but he is overjoyed at this particular news. So Israel set out with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will close your eyes." Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They took their livestock and their property which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and came to Egypt. Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons, his grandsons with him, his daughters, his granddaughters, all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. So they go back here. They were living at Hebron, which is here. They go down to Beersheba, and this is where God appears to him again and tells him to feel confident to go on down into Egypt. That is what God has planned for him at this particular time. So we go to look at those who left to Egypt. We see that these are the list of names that were given here. Reuben had four sons. Simeon had six. And why this last one is listed this way, we have no idea. She's listed that way as the son of a Canaanite woman. So it may be that he had a second wife or a concubine. Or it may have been no relationship at all with the woman other than the sexual one. Levi with three sons. And these three sons are going to be important because these are the ones through whom the priesthood came. Judah and his sons, now I listed here Ur and Onan, but were both deceased at this particular time. Shelah and Perez, Hezron and Hamul and Zerah. So there was six people there in this group. Issachar with four sons, Zebulun with three. Leah is deceased at this particular time. We find that out later in the passage. We will see that in the later chapter. And Dinah is listed as coming down. Then the sons of Zilpah's people, Gad and his sons, seven sons there, Asher, and they've listed here four sons, two grandsons, and a daughter. So eight people. So this is the second woman that is listed in the list here. Joseph listed two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and that's all the sons of Joseph that we know of. And then Benjamin and his descendants. There is some question. Some people said it's not possible for Benjamin to have grown up, and since he was born after they got back to the land of Canaan, that he could have had this many sons and grandsons and all, and so that somebody else is mixed in here. But this is what the scripture says the list is of these people. So Dan with one son, Naphtali with four sons. So all the persons belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were two. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came to Egypt were 70. Now, obviously, they're listing this very carefully. So this is the direct descendants of Jacob. There were others, the wives of his sons, who are not listed here, not counted in this counting. So was there just 70 people who went down there, or was it more than that? Yes?
Well, it also doesn't count his servants from the sons.
That's true.
He's known to have many servants.
He's known to have many servants. So the number of people that actually went down there was probably well over 100. We have no idea how great the number was, but it was certainly larger than these numbers here, because these are only listing the direct descendants. There were 69 people named in the list. Jacob himself makes 70. To get down to 66, you exclude Jacob and exclude Joseph and his two sons. So we can resolve all the numbers here among themselves to what they are. But these are the children of Jacob. These are the group that came down to Canaan with him, or to Egypt with him from Canaan. Now he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out the way to him to Goshen. And they came to the land of Goshen. Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And as soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a long time. So Jacob was extremely pleased to meet up again with Joseph. We see that that's something that we would expect. I guess that he wept on his neck a long time. So how long it was, we don't know. Then Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive." Joseph said to his brethren, to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household, who are in the land of Canaan, have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians." So we see here some class distinctions. The Egyptians would look down their nose at anybody who was a shepherd. They were largely farmers. They were tilling the ground around the Nile River, which was extremely fertile land. And the idea that somebody would go out and spend their days and weeks following a herd of sheep or cattle around in the wilderness was something that they just couldn't possibly understand. And so they looked down their nose at anybody who was a shepherd. So we see this. Goshen is in this region here. Now, you notice that this darker green is the really fertile area of the Nile Delta there, in the Nile Valley. Goshen is off then to the side. It's getting off into the wilderness here a little bit. To the east. And this would have been better grazing land and not particularly farming land as well as you would find in the darker green area there. So Jacob came from Beersheba. He stopped there for coming down from Hebron, stopped at Beersheba, probably took this route here along the coast to get down to Goshen. And this is where that Jacob finally meets again with his father. Okay. "And Jacob went and told Pharaoh, 'This is my father and my brothers and their flocks and their herds and all that they have come out of the land of Canaan. And behold, they are in the land of Goshen.' He took 5 men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh." We don't know which 5 it was, but 5 of his brothers. "And Pharaoh said to his brothers, 'What is your occupation?' So they said to Pharaoh, 'Your servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers.' They said to Pharaoh, 'We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, please let your servants live in the land of Goshen.' And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal. Settle your fathers and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, then put them in charge of my livestock.'" So when we get back into studying the story of Joseph, you recognize that basically Pharaoh owned all the livestock in the land of Egypt. That's something that Joseph had arranged but in the selling of the grain that they had collected over the years. Pharaoh owed Joseph a whole lot in terms of his physical wealth and his stature, and is quite willing to give them some of that land out there that really wasn't all that good anyway. So we see these people here and recognize the things that they were doing. It's nothing any different than we would probably expect of someone today. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many years have you lived?" So Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life, nor have they attained to the years of my father, that my fathers lived during the days of their sojourning." So this is just kind of interesting, I think, that we saw with Isaac, as he approached death, he had lived many years and was pleased with the life that he had lived, and Abraham, I think, as well. But Jacob, no, few years, only 130, and they were unpleasant years. Now, part of that, I suspect, he brought on himself with the showing of favoritism. The favoritism that his mother had shown to him had caused him to be driven from his home, which wouldn't have been a very pleasant thing when he went back up to Padan Aram. And the fear he had of Esau when he was coming back down to the land, the trouble he felt when his sons massacred the town of Shechem, and all of the problems he had could see with his sons hating Joseph, and but partly because of the favoritism that Jacob had shown to them. So we can see that there was certainly a number of unpleasant things likely going on in Jacob's life. And few and unpleasant have been the years of my life. Hopefully none of us need to say that as we get older, that there have been few and unpleasant. Although Jacob has probably shown more of a faithfulness to God than we see even with Isaac, at least. He has seen visions from God. God has spoken with him, and he has been offering sacrifices to God seemingly on a regular basis. We bump into something that he's done. But he still feels that his life has been unpleasant. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence. So Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, the best of the land in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had ordered. Joseph provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to their little ones. So he gave them the food they needed to support their families. We don't know much more about it than that. Joseph was in charge of distributing all the food that was available in Egypt. And so he was supplying them this probably without at charge. They were just Joseph's family, and he was taking care of them. Now Israel lives in the land of Egypt in Goshen, and they acquired property in it, were fruitful, and became very numerous. Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. Still, Abraham had lived 175. Isaac, if memory serves me right, 180. So he was still quite a few years younger than his father and grandfather were when they died. But 147 years is a long time. Not many of us can look at anywhere even half that. Maybe a few of us can say half of that, but not very many. When time for Israel to die drew near, he called his son Joseph and said to him, "Please, if I have found favor in your sight, place now your hand under my thigh and deal with me in kindness and faithfulness." We've seen this kind of an oath before. When Abraham sent his servant back up to get a son for Isaac, that Abraham's servant placed his hand under Abraham's thigh as a way of sealing the particular oath. He says, please do not bury me in Egypt, but when I lie down with your fathers, you shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place. And he said, I will do as you have said. And he said, swear to me. So he swore to him. Then Israel bowed in worship at the head of the bed. So Jacob is bedfast at this time, or at least seems to be fairly nearly so anyway. He's on the bed when Joseph comes to him. So it came about that after these days that Joseph was told, behold, your father is sick. So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with him. And when it was told to Jacob, behold, your son Joseph has come to you, Israel collected his strength and sat up in bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and numerous, and I will make you a company of peoples, and will give you this land to your descendants after you for an everlasting possession. Now your two sons who were born to me in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine as Reuben and Simeon are. So we're going to note that this particular statement is important when you go to count the 12 tribes of Israel. Because there is no tribe of Joseph listed. There's tribes of Ephraim and tribe of Manasseh. And yet they're still all counted as 12 tribes. The tribe of Levi was not counted then when it was counting the 12 tribes of Israel. That's how they get it down to 12 tribes from the 13 you would have with splitting up Joseph's tribe into two tribes. But this is what Jacob is saying here, that Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine. They're to be my sons, be considered as my sons, rather than Joseph's sons that would be his grandsons. But your offspring that have been born to you after them shall be yours, and they shall be called by the names of their brothers in their inheritance. Now as for me, when I came to Paddan from Paddan, Rachel died to my sorrow in the land of Canaan on the journey. When we were still some distance to go to Ephrath, that I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is to Bethlehem. Bethlehem is a town we have heard mentioned several times, but don't seem to have anybody of the scripture living there yet at this particular time. It's a Canaanite city. Now when Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, whose are these? Joseph said to his father, these are my sons whom God has given me. So he said, bring them to me, please, that I may bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were so dim from age that he could not see. And Joseph brought them close to him, and he kissed them and embraced them. Israel said to Joseph, I never expected to see your face. And behold, God has let me see your children as well. Then Joseph took them from his knees and bowed with his face to the ground. Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right. So they're facing him. And we see this opposition of the hands. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the hand of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, crossing his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. So Jacob is going to bless Ephraim over Manasseh. But this is not something that's done. The firstborn is the one that gets all of the greatest blessing. He blessed Joseph and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and may my name live on in them, in the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and may they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. So he's giving this blessing apparently on both boys, the blessing for Joseph. When Joseph saw that his father had laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him, and he grasped his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Please place your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also will become a people, and he also will be great. However, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. He blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will pronounce blessings, saying, may God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. And I will give you one portion more than your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with the sword, with my sword and my bow. So he's telling Joseph in no uncertain terms that Ephraim is going to be greater than Manasseh. Yes, Bill.
Yeah, just thinking about the statement here, down at the end of the chapter, back in verse 9, where Jacob says, few and unpleasant have been the days of my life.
Yes.
And you've got to think, is he being pretty pessimistic there? Because certainly if you were just to think about the hardship, you would come up with that thing, that kind of idea. But it's like he's not thinking about the rest of the water and the glass is half full of water. You know, he's thinking about the empty places. Because look at how many times God has blessed him and delivered him. Even now, coming into Egypt, that's a huge deliverance. He could have been dead up in
Yes.
You know, and yet, no, they were delivered there. So it's like, I mean, I hesitate to judge the character of Israel, you know. But it's like, I'm wondering if he's just...
Yeah, it's hard to say for sure.
It makes me think. Look at all the things he could have been saying. He could have said, well, I had a hard life and I had a good life. You know, but he said they've been unpleasant.
It just seems that the things just didn't seem to work for Joseph the way he expected. I mean, he got his brother's birthright. Then he got his brother's blessing. But that just caused him to flee from home and go up to Haran, to his ancestors up there, his family that was still living in that part of the world. He worked for 7 years for Rachel, and Laban gave him Leah. And he worked another 7 years and got Rachel. Yes, but then he worked six more years for wages, but Laban kept changing his wages, changing them 10 times in 6 years, because it seemed that Jacob was prospering more than he was. So everything he did in his life seemed to be, just didn't work out the way he expected it to. Yes, Andrew?
Well, when you were going through that earlier, I was thinking God blessed him by changing his name, but he also gave him a thorn in the flesh, basically, by shrinking the sinew of his hip. I can only imagine what kind of pain he lived in for the rest of his life with that, you know, that infirmity.
Yeah.
You know, and that can cloud your outlook as well if you're in constant pain. So I could see why he might have had that outlook.
Okay, go ahead.
Of course, later on in much scripture, it points out that adversity is what improves us. And it's God, adversity is actually a blessing from God. So therefore, maybe that's what he's saying. My life has been filled with adversity, and this has produced what I am today.
Yeah, we don't see any real single test of Jacob's faith in God, but he seems to have trusted in God throughout his whole life. And so that his faith was there, but he looked back at life and didn't find it had been very pleasant. Hopefully we can look at it with a different attitude. That recognizing that, yes, everything is not going to go our way. We're maybe not going to face as many problems as Jacob did. Maybe we're going to face more. It's hard to tell. But we keep our faith in God, our hope placed on something in the future that comes after death, then we really shouldn't need to have this particular attitude that few and unpleasant have been the days of my life. I think most of us should be able to look back at death and say, yes, there was problems, there was pain, there was some suffering, but God was with me all the way. And if we take that attitude, we shouldn't be, as Jacob was, saying, few and unpleasant have been the days of my life. Okay. So then Jacob assembled his sons. I thought we would finish this today, but I'm not sure it's going to happen. It said, assemble yourselves that I may tell you what will befall you in the days to come. So he's going to give them a blessing. He's going to prophesy about them. He says, gather together and hear, O sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength. Preeminent in dignity, preeminent in power, uncontrolled as water, you shall not have the preeminence because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. So Reuben, the firstborn, should have had the birthright. But at this point, Jacob is taking that away from him. He's demoting him, shall we say. He is not going to be the preeminent one in the family because he went up and lay with his concubine. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Let not my soul enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly. Because in their anger they slew men. In their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce. And their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And if you look further ahead to the time when the land of Canaan is being divided among the tribes, Levi was not given a tribal area. We're given the cities of refuge, and I think, 40-some cities in the land, but they were scattered throughout the land. There was no single tribal area for Levi. Nor was Simeon given a tribal area, except they occupied some territory in the land of Judah, in the territory of Judah. So we see Jacob making this particular prophecy here that this was going to befall them. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's son shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He crouches, he lies down as a lion who dares rouse him up. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh comes. We'll look more about until Shiloh comes on the next slide. And to him shall be the obedience of the people. He ties his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are dull from wine and his teeth white from milk. So Judah here is promised that the ruling of the nation of Israel will come through his tribe, and it will not depart from that tribe until Shiloh comes. I looked up, tried to figure out what this meant. I don't need to go over this in great detail. There's a lot of diverse interpretations of it. The idea that till he come, whose it is apparently what this particular authors are thinking about, that this is what it means. It's always been regarded as messianic. Throughout history, that has been the case. The term itself means peaceful, but that's obviously not what it meant here. If it's trying to be used as a proper name, it's the only place in the Bible where this occurs. So it can't be, it's very doubtful that it is used that way. The rendering, till he come to Shiloh, where Shiloh is taken as the name of a place, not a person, is plausible, but the tabernacle was in Shiloh for a good many years after they came back into the land of Canaan, into that place. But again, that's not messianic in that sense, and this is obviously a messianic prophet. So the argument that it probably means until he come whose it is, which would obviously refer to Christ in that regard, is what this particular passage means. So Judah shall rule Israel from the time he begins to rule, which would be the time of David, up until Christ came. After that, Christ will be ruling but not the physical nation of Israel. Zebulun will dwell at the seashore, and he shall be a haven for ships. His flanks shall be towards Sidon, prophesying that to what part of the land of Canaan he's going to occupy. Issachar is a strong donkey laying down between the sheepfolds. When he saw that a resting place was good and that the land was pleasant, he bowed his shoulder to bear burdens and became a slave at forced labor. Don't really know what that necessarily means either. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path that bites at the horse's heels, so that his rider falls backwards. For your salvation I wait, O Lord. And Dan, we can see when we get over into the book of Judges, was somewhat of a treacherous people. For Gad, raiders shall raid him, but he will raid at their heels. For as for Asher, his food shall be rich, and he will yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a doe who's loose, let loose. He gives beautiful words. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a spring. His branches run over a wall. The archers bitterly attacked him. He shot at him and harassed him. But his bow remained firm and his arms were agile from the hands of the mighty one of Jacob. For there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. From the God of your fathers who helps you, by the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb, the blessings of your father have surpassed the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bond of the everlasting hills. May they be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of his head of one distinguished among his brothers. And then Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours the prey, and in the evening he divides the spoil. And we can see Benjamin having some difficulties too later on. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. This is what their father said to them when he blessed them. Then he charged them and said to them, I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave which is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham brought with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. And we remember that, Abraham purchasing that land when Sarah died. And there Abraham and Sarah were buried as well as Isaac and Rebekah. He says, for there they buried Abraham and his wife Sarah, there they buried Isaac and his wife Rebekah, and there I buried Leah, which is how we know she did not come down to Canaan, to Egypt with them, because she was buried in that cave. The field and the cave that is in it, purchased from the sons of Heth. And Jacob finished charging his sons, he drew his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. And our time has been up for a couple of minutes. Bill?
Quick question. Is it unreasonable to conjecture, or I guess it would be speculating, that if Reuben had behaved better and Simeon behaved better at least, that Judah wouldn't have been the one that would have the scepter and Christ might have come through them? It looks like it's given a reason of why Judah is the one.
Yes.
Possibly, at least part of the reason is, because of the behavior and the character of his older brothers.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. But it's, you know, we'd be pure speculation. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah. Just in that context, it looks like that's a
conclusion. Okay, well, the rest of the story here is the story of the burial of Jacob. I don't really think it's necessary to go into that. They took him back up to the cave and buried him in that cave at Machpelah, just as he had requested. Okay, any other comments? Next week we'll try to go into the story of Joseph in more detail.